Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you guys about the MLB Roto Baller Challenge, hosted by our friends at Fantrax on Fantrax.com. Fantrax is the most customizable free fantasy baseball platform in the industry, and that's why we're hosting over our 2022 Roto Baller Challenge over on Fantrax. If you want the greatest fantasy experience, sign up for a free Roto Baller Challenge team today by going to rotoballer.com/challenge. All leagues are free to join, and you get to compete against Roto Baller writers and readers for a shot at $500 cash grand prize. All new Fantrax users get entered into a free giveaway to win a signed official MLB Wander Franco jersey. If you want to get entered to win a Wander Franco jersey and you're new to Fantrax, go to Fantrax.com/Bubba and sign up for your free Fantrax account today. Once you have your Fantrax account, go to rotoballer.com/challenge to join the Challenge League, but go to Fantrax.com/Bubba to create your Fantrax account, be entered to win a Wander Franco autographed jersey. But for now, welcome to Benched with Bubba. Back, everybody, to the second episode of Bubba and the Bloom. We're going to talk about some fab for the week because that starts this week, everybody, on Sunday. So we'll get you ready for that. Tons of awesome listener questions. Got some recent news that we're going to want to dig into because it's kind of important stuff. But you can find me on Twitter at BDentric and the Bloom portion of Bubba and the Bloom on Twitter at Ryan BHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How we doing, my friend?
Doing pretty good, Bubba. Survival day on the home front. We were chatting before, but have two little guys at home sick with me today. But everyone's healthy, got through the day okay, and I'm ready to absolutely talk some baseball. 1 week from opening day, and like you said, fab this weekend. It's like, oh, man, now we need to start to switch from draft mode to in-season mode. So that's happening, and it's happening quick.
Do you have any more drafts you're planning to do? You have a main event, don't you?
I've got a main event. I've got three more drafts. So I've got the WRF League, which is the Pacific Northwest, I guess, writers and analysts league tomorrow night, Friday night. And then I've got my home league, or my home league, my family league, which is how I got into fantasy baseball like almost 20 years ago. Nice. It's an ESPN points league with kind of the guys in my family. I've got my aunt in there. It's a blast. That's Sunday night, and then main event Wednesday night, the night before opening day. That's what I did last year. Was like the last draft before opening day. Nice. And it was a blast. I'm going back to that well this year just to try and avoid any possible last minute injuries. So yeah, Wednesday's the final exam.
Nice. Yeah, there's news every day, it seems like. And tonight's news, we'll start off with Jacob DeGrom injured already. Like, we knew he was already probably hurt going into the season, but we saw the bullpens that looked really, really good. We're sitting there going, okay, this works. This is good. But now it says he has a tight right shoulder, says Buck Showalter. He will likely be scratched from his scheduled start tomorrow, which is Friday, and will likely go for tests. So a lot of likelies, because that's the way the Mets do things. But it was one of those, as I saw him pitch, I was kind of mad I didn't have any shares up till now. And now it's like one of those, maybe for the better thing. So what's your thoughts on this? Because obviously he could get a test and just could be some like inflammation like Wheeler had and he'll be fine, or this could be a bad deal.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a week ago we were kind of flabbergasted that DeGrom went sixth, and then I made the prediction that he might even go first overall in Vegas, which he ended up not, but it's crazy how the roller coaster of rostering Jacob DeGrom can be. So, yeah, like we're recording this Thursday night, and then all we have so far is just that shoulder tightness. It is kind of deja vu, right? And this is kind of what you sign up for with DeGrom, and, you know, you hope he's just delayed from opening day and he'll be back on the mound in 2-3 weeks and doing DeGrom things. People who rostered him last year are used to that. That's kind of the emotional roller coaster of having. That's kind of the best case scenario. The worst case is it's something else. So we'll see what the MRI comes back on Friday, but it's tough news. We're definitely not in the clear with DeGrom, despite the, you know, the spring training sexiness that we saw his first two starts or his first two appearances. And it's just a reminder that, you know, you can come out throwing gas, and again, touch on this last week, even in short inning stints, and it looks great. The videos look great, but a lot of these underlying issues just don't go away with some good spring training appearances. So still off to Grom. It'll be interesting to see where he goes in main events coming up. So he'll definitely fall. It'll be interesting to see how far yeah. he falls, because there are still folks who are going to want to.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Because like even our buddy Vlad Sedler, he did an OC on Wednesday and posted his team. He took DeGrom in round two, and he's like, I'm just hoping for 100 innings. 100. Yep. All I want is 100 innings of DeGrom,
which is still like very elite. Much a play. I mean, this could be a severe, and it's Twitter. Everything's an overreaction.
Yep.
I mean, 100, 120, 140 could still be in play. It just, we'll see. We don't have enough info right now, but yeah, it's, I don't know. My mental health is not in that space where I can take a whole season of having DeGrom on my team and trying to keep up with all this.
Yeah, I'll have enough problems of my own to deal with
yes.
throughout the season. And the thing with DeGrom is with this injury, you can pretty much lock in he's going to miss the first week or two of the season for sure. Because no matter what he does, he has to ramp back up and they'll slow play it. So you got that. It'll be interesting to see if he kind of falls in that Tatis range. That's kind of what I'm thinking. Like, do you take your Tatis chance like you do with DeGrom? So we'll wait and see there. Another free agent, everyone's been talking about, like, where's Michael Conforto? What's going on with Michael Conforto? Well, it turns out he injured his shoulder in like December, and Scott Boras came out talking about that. So he's rehabbing that. He's starting to swing regularly now, which tells you a lot. Is he just off the board for you now?
Yeah, I mean, especially if you have to stash Conforto, you don't know when he'll sign. Reading between the lines, and Boras isn't going to come out and say, "Yeah, his shoulder's real bad." The kind of spin on it was, oh, we're just going to wait and showcase Conforto until he's, you know, fully healthy. It's just a little bit of a delay. Yeah, that doesn't sound good. I mean, it all makes sense now in retrospect, right? That you know, what happened to Conforto? Why didn't he sign? And now we know. So, yeah, pretty much off my board right now. I don't think, unless you've got a super deep bench or, you can't even put him in an IL slot. He's just a free agent. So you have to stash him. And so, yeah, Hope he's good. Hope he's better. We'll see when he signs, but it does not sound good. It doesn't sound imminent either.
No, not at all. A couple other pieces of news here. I saw your tweet earlier today because I forgot all about it. Tim Anderson will be suspended for the first two games of the season, which shortens his week. And obviously, it's not going to stop you from drafting Tim Anderson. But I think the take-home is make sure you got another shortstop to start for the first few days. That'd be my 2 cents, maybe.
Yeah, we'll talk about kind of schedules and whatnot this and start planning for the first period with the Fab segment. But yeah, Chicago's off on opening day, and then Anderson will be suspended Friday and Saturday. So you're only getting one game in weekly leagues from Tim Anderson. So yeah, have some alternatives in mind when you do Fab this weekend. The funny thing is, man, like, yeah, I mean, we're both super in on Tim Anderson, and I took him in labor. I've taken him in a few spots, and it's just like for as much time as we spend on fantasy baseball and try and keep up with everything, I listen to all kinds of podcasts, read articles, totally forgot that this even happened. I saw the blurb that says, that said Tim Anderson's suspension has been reduced from 3 to 2, and I'm like, suspension? Oh, yeah, that's right. And so, like, yeah, like it doesn't affect his draft stock. It's just two games, but yeah, just have that ready. But it is funny how much attention we pay, and even stuff like this slips through the cracks. Because I haven't heard, even on other podcasts, I haven't heard about the suspension from anyone else out there. So it's kind of out of the blue and something I think we all totally forgot about.
Yeah, it was kind of mum's the word. That's the way it feels to me. So that was kind of a surprise there for sure. This didn't happen yet. It might not happen, but it seemed like there's some pretty good momentum there. Just want to get your thoughts in case it happens, like when we're done recording. Brian Reynolds, there's some the Padres are heavily interested in Brian Reynolds, and it comes down to kind of what pitchers will go to Pittsburgh is what it sounds like in the mix here. But a couple questions. They needed another outfielder with injuries because right now they didn't really love the idea of Grisham being the only center fielder on the roster. And secondly, with the need for an outfield, it looks like C.J. Abrams is going to make the team and play the outfield or the infield. That might kind of put a bugaboo on that. So what's kind of your take on the potential of Reynolds going to San Diego and the aftermath, basically?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, we'll see if it even happens. It definitely, it would stink for Pirates fans. I mean, they've already written off this season for sure. And just, and it kind of, I don't know, it just kind of drives that final nail in the coffin. Like you kind of, they're not competing anyway. So it makes sense for them to get rid of Reynolds. In terms of the fallout for San Diego, yeah, it would take an outfield spot. Could definitely take up C.J. Abrams. Could be a potential knock for someone like Will Myers, who has platooned in the past. So there's a lot of bodies in San Diego's outfield. Reynolds, obviously, if he got traded, would start. I think Grisham would start. So I think like Will Myers or maybe Abrams would be impacted if Abrams does, in fact, make the team. And it does sound like that's going to happen. We're hearing about all these prospects that are getting sent down right about now. So I think we'll know in these next couple of days if Abrams is going to make the team. But yeah, it would certainly muddy the outfield waters from a fantasy sense for San Diego, but the trade makes sense. The rumored trade makes sense because San Diego is kind of going all in and contending this year while Pittsburgh is pretty much the exact everything. Opposite. Yeah.
You mentioned some prospects are getting sent down right now, and a couple that we've known of, Josh Lowe, Jose Miranda, Trevor Lenz of Kansas City, O'Neill Cruz of Pittsburgh. Right now, Julio Rodriguez and company are still up. If you did draft these guys, say in a deep league, are you dropping them? Is it a 12-team only drop? Like, how are you approaching this come this first Fab period?
I think the only one I would think about keeping is O'Neill Cruz. I just don't know how long. I think you had Jeff Erickson on Tuesday on the show, and we're talking maybe 2 weeks is the estimate. Could be longer, but I would at least leave you. If you don't have a glaring need and you don't have an obvious drop, I would leave O'Neill Cruz and stash him. The other guys, I didn't think Melendez would make the team. They kind of played him around a little bit in the field, and it didn't really work out. So it Sal Perez is kind of stuck there, and Melendez, you know, maybe would DH if he comes up, but I don't think he's worth stashing, especially like an NFBC. You don't want to hold a third catcher like that. So pretty much all those guys and low for Tampa Bay doesn't surprise me at all. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him until at least midseason. And generally with these prospects in an NFBC type format, if you genuinely think it's more than like 2 or 3 weeks, I think you need to cut bait, especially because none of these guys except for Cruz are really top flight. Lowe would be in there, but I think he's going to be a midseason call-up. So I think pretty much any of these guys, as the injuries start to pile up elsewhere on your roster, you can't afford too many of these stashes, and so I'd be aggressive with your drops with these folks this weekend.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And guys like we feel like Julio Rodriguez and Riley Green and these guys are making the team. So cross your fingers, like Ryan said earlier, we should find out for sure, I'd say, in the coming days. So something to think about. One more piece of news here. Hunter Green did make the Reds rotation. It's going to be the fifth starter the first time around. Any interest? Is he like move up your boards? Is it one of those like he's still young, you're not really super invested? What's your thoughts on Hunter Green?
I'm excited. It's exciting to see Cincinnati actually do that for, you know, the fire sale that they've had so far this compressed preseason. It's nice of them to kind of be aggressive and bring up Green. I'm definitely interested. Love the fastball. It kind of sits 90, upper 90s. Chris Blessing wrote up Green for Baseball HQ in the minor league baseball analyst. And the slider is just dominant. So that ultimately the third pitch is going to be what makes or breaks Green, at least in the short term. Long term, he's a great asset, but will that change up be good enough at present for Green to get by? That's the risk, but at the very least, he's an elite two-pitch guy, and it sounds like Cincinnati's going to let him go. So the park isn't great. The division is. I'm seeing Green go in a reasonable spot in drafts where you don't really have too much to lose if it doesn't work out. So he's definitely somebody who I'm tracking along with. Maybe some of the guys we'll talk about in Fab, like a Mackenzie Gore type. It's an interesting group to be in.
Yeah, most definitely. Let's talk Fab. Let's get to Fab because that last piece of news there, we have a listener question on that later. So we will hit on him in a bit. So we'll talk Fab. We'll talk some pitchers. We'll talk some hitters. Ryan made a nice sheet here. It's basically using TGFBI, less than 60% owned players, and then he has them in ADP based on the main event. So we have ownership in TGFBI main event 80 to kind of get gauge on, because obviously when we drove to TGFBI, February, if it was a long time ago. So there's going to be a lot of guys that have gotten steam here that are going to be available, and that might happen for a lot more people that did some early drafting as well. So the guy that's on the top here is a great one to talk about. He was impressively drafted in almost 60% of TGFBI leagues. But Mitch Keller, main ADP of 322. The dude's been crushing it in the spring with the velocity and everything else. This is going to be a fun one to see how much he goes for. It's like, I would recommend not breaking the bank for Mitch Keller, because it is Mitch Keller, but definitely worth a look, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely worth a look. Not worth, like you said, not worth breaking the bank. But if you've got, I don't know, maybe 5 to 10% of your FAB budget, maybe 5%. That's something where I'd be interested in Mitch Keller. You cannot ignore the prospect pedigree with what we've seen in spring. And so, like, I was kind of a sucker. I took Mitch Keller in the last round of labor, like 29th round in early February. And that was all based on him throwing like 101 in a video. It's not something that I would normally do, but it was the last round and whatever. Mitch Keller has carried forward that momentum and increase in velocity, not just on the fastball, but all of his pitches. So that body of work that we've seen in spring, and that's the type of thing that is actionable, I think, in spring training, is that kind of per pitch stuff. Is the stuff improving? Is the velocity improving? Is the per pitch type metrics, like your swinging strike rate, your chase rates, your CSW, your swinging strikes. That's the stuff I'm looking at. And Keller passes those tests with flying colors. And then on top of that, like I said, you've got the pedigree. This is somebody who, I just think back to like Tyler Glasnow, who was, you know, in Pittsburgh and kind of tumbled there and didn't take off until he went to Tampa. But it's a new regime in Pittsburgh now, and I kind of get those vibes of like a super post type guy who is starting to turn things around. And again, if it doesn't work out, like I said, maybe 5% of your FAB budget, I think it's worth taking a stab at him.
Yeah, I think it definitely is. And there's not going to be a whole lot of guys to break the bank for. You'll have a few throughout this because it's a long season, folks. But you'll definitely want to churn and burn, because you probably drafted guys that are out for the season now or aren't going to make a team. You're going to have holes. Like, go back and look at some rosters you drafted. You're like, oh, no.
Or retired. We had so this is like, and that's the point of this. We're not normally going to do FAB episodes on, but just because it's so kind of irrelevant by Sunday, but like so many leagues drafted during the lockout, and even like First Pitch Arizona, we had an auction league, and the first FAB I'm running that for HQ, the first FAB is this Sunday, and my dad was in the league, and he drafted Buster Posey, who has since retired. Yep. So it's not even just injured guys, it's guys who have since retired from baseball, but back from October. So like in a league like that, this first FAB period, even though there's not like a whole lot, especially on the hitter side, I think it's kind of thin. And I'll share these boards probably on Friday at some point. I'll tweet them out. But it's almost like a kind of a second draft for some of these leagues that went real early. So
like I say, don't break the bank, but if you're going to, it's probably for guys that might be closing. That might be a thing if you're hurting for saves. If you drafted and you're like, well, my specs didn't work out so well. So here we are. Well, you got some new specs. Daniel Hudson, only rostered in 16% of leagues, ADP at 354. And you got guys like Chris Stratton down here. Yep. And you'll probably have a few more. Bruiser Gratterall is basically only 3% rostered. So how would you approach those reliever types? For me, Hudson would be like my main target, but they're all going to have a nice little share of the pie, I think.
Yeah, Hudson would be the main target for me too, but not to the point where I'm breaking any kind of bank. I think the general theme that that I think we need to take away from this fab period is, and again, every league is different, but the TGFBI is at least, it's a 15 teamer and 60% owned. So like this, I hope is reasonable enough for the different types of leagues out there. But I don't see anyone worth breaking the bank for on closers at all. I would definitely recommend throwing out a couple feelers, since there are a few, like Bubba, like you said, with Hudson, with Michael Givens, throw a couple feelers out there, see if anyone slips through the cracks, but I wouldn't break the bank. But yeah, Hudson would be my top guy. We'll see if it's him or Tanner Rainey. Not Rainey. We'll see what he does in LA, just because with Trinan, I don't know if that will be a committee. It sounds like it will be, which kind of sucks for early Roberts drafters, but we'll see. Hudson, I would be aggressive, but not too much, just because we don't really have that. It's still going to be a committee out there.
And then I know we had a listener question. We can hit on it a little bit of it now, probably, and more later. But a lot of this fab period should also be used for taking advantage of scheduling, as you kind of hinted at earlier. Like you can get a couple guys, like if the rotation plan still for that to change, about a week of spring training to go. But like Zach Eflin potentially could be a two-star guy the following week. Dylan Bundy could. You got like JT Brubaker. There's a handful of other options here. Madison Bumgarner even could be a guy. He was only rostered in 42% of TGFBI leagues. Jake Odorizzi's now in the rotation. So how are you filling your holes for this? Would you rather go for these two-star guys and potential matchups, or are you looking for maybe a guy you think like one of these young arms, which we can talk about, like a Brash or a Gore that might be more of a long-term hope type thing?
So the biggest thing I'm looking for this weekend is just number of games. So it looks like most teams are at three. I don't think anyone has less than that, but there's some that are four. So on the hitter side, every game counts, every counting stat counts. So if you've got hitters on a four game schedule, that's going to matter. We've got at Colorado, which again, it's early in the season, so who knows what the weather will be out there. One thing I'm looking at is looking ahead to the following week too. So like, you talked about Brash, Bubba, the kind of the fourth and fifth starters, like for example, those guys are going to get two start weeks perhaps next week. So like, for example, St. Louis, I'll shy away from actual names at this point because we don't know what the rotations are going to settle out, but St. Louis plays Pittsburgh next Monday. And so their fourth or perhaps fifth starter is going to get a two-step starting with Pittsburgh starting on Monday and then going, looks like they're going to Milwaukee in the second half of next week. But those fourth and fifth starters, if you can have them and look ahead to the following week for Monday, that's a nice opportunity to pick up an early two start, especially against some weaker competition. Atlanta, for example, is facing Washington in the beginning half of next week. The other big important thing for this week is, again, if you have those fourth and fifth starters, they're not going to probably pitch at all until early next week. So you want to look, and if you have room for middle relievers or anyone who can kind of pick up a vulture win or even just get you an inning or two of decent ratios and a couple strikeouts, like that kind of stuff, when you build it up over time, that stuff matters. So those are the two big things I'm looking for stashing kind of late rotation guys for next week, but then also backfilling that if you've got enough roster space with middle relievers for this first kind of Thursday through Sunday run.
Yeah, but besides just if your guys aren't starting, just to have somebody in the on your roster, as you mentioned, but a lot of these guys aren't going deep, so you're gonna get a lot of extra relievers in games. They got 28 man rosters right now, so like the Dodgers even said they're trying to decide if they want 15 or 16 pitchers. So it's going to be deep with relief options. That's where, like we talked about it before, Colin McHugh could become interesting all of a sudden, because you know he could be a long man that could sneak out a win. But there's every team's got him, and so kind of look into some reliever lists. Every website's got it, so I don't want to plug them all, but like you have Reliever Recon, RotoWire, HQ, they all have like different reliever lists, and you don't look like the eighth and ninth inning guys. Go look at the sixth and seventh inning guys. Go see what you can do there. You can get them for like a buck and then drop them next week and just use them for the weekend. Maybe they get two appearances, get you like three Ks, somehow sneak out a win or something. You'd be happier than happy. So
or, yeah,
look yep. at those.
or even your swingman types. Like, and I think that's going to extend beyond the first week. Like,
it'll be a couple weeks for sure.
Yeah, like I read a thing on Blake Snell today, and it was, you know, not to single out Snell, he didn't pitch that well, but you know, whatever. It was his first start of the season or the spring training. And the blurb, I think it was on NBC Sports Edge, said basically he's not going to be going five innings for at least his first couple starts. And that's not just a down thing on Blake Snell. I think that's going to be really common because with the compressed spring training, I mean, this is kind of like 2020 all over again, at least for this part, not everything else. But we're going to see shorter stints from starters these first few weeks. So if I have one kind of takeaway for you folks listening is take a look at your starting pitchers and just go through and see how many innings they've thrown this spring. Have they made more than one start? Have they made more than two starts? How long are those outings? Because that's going to have an impact, especially like kind of your lower end rotation guys. That's going to have an impact on how far they go these first couple starts in the regular season and obviously hurt their chances for wins. So I think that, yeah, like kind of the Christian Javier types, those long men, the transition guys in the bullpen are going to be super valuable these first few weeks just because of, yeah, like the expanded rosters and having so much more pitching heavy rosters on every team pretty much this first month of the season.
Yeah, there's some really interesting names really for swingmen. You mentioned Javier, you got McHugh, AJ Puck could be a long guy they've talked about. Yep. Like Brent Suter, all the wins he had last year for Milwaukee, that could happen again for the first couple of weeks. Seth Lugo has been great for that in his career. That's one thing he does very well. So there's a handful of those guys. You wouldn't be shocked if they put together some run for you in these early weeks where you're trying to mix and match to fill things out. You even have Nick Martinez on this list, rostered in 58% of leagues. He's not guaranteed a spot in the rotation, but if he isn't, he'll be one of the swingmen. You can look at that. So you could see him paired with Snell on those starts easily in situations like that. So that is quite intriguing to look at here. Any other pitchers? Like you have Ryan Yarbrough, his velocity's up, so that's intriguing people. That could be something. He's rostered only 23% of leagues, so that could be. There's a different guy where it's like, okay, we're looking at maybe two start guys, swingmen types. Yarbrough's a guy we've seen do it for a full season, and then we saw everything just disappear for a season. So it's one of those. If that velocity's back up, we might get the guy we saw like back in 2019. Where we were just like, wow, this is good. So are you like, folk? Like if your team doesn't have a drastic need per se, would you be going more for the Yarbroughs or would you be going more for these two-star guys? How would you kind of look at your team?
I'm really interested in what Yarbrough is doing. So I'd lean more Yarbrough just in that case, just because we have the track record of Yarbrough having pretty elite control. And then the difference for Yarbrough is like, yeah, like going upper 80s, 88 to low 90s, around 90. That's a huge difference for his velocity. So I'm glad you point him out. Yarbrough is definitely someone who, if he's available, you definitely want to target. I in AL Tout Wars, he was a reserve pick for me. And so I'm pretty thrilled about that. Another guy, and I briefly mentioned him last week, but we also got a question from one of the listeners is Michael Wacha, who has been on all kinds of bloom boards this draft season. So Wacha, now that he seemingly has a rotation spot all sewn up with Boston, I think that's going to be a real big boon for him. Wacha in the second half last year, he was one of the top gainers. So this was a board I put out in early January. Wacha has the fifth highest gain in strikeout minus walk rate from first to second half. And a lot of times the projection systems are not going to pick up on stuff like that. No. And he paired that jump in strikeout minus walk rate with a pitch mix change, with more changeups for Wacha in the second half. So that's just an example of a guy who I think kind of quietly turned things around in season and now has a role and is somewhat available in a lot of these leagues. So that's definitely someone who I would target.
One of my favorite targets is in a scenario like the Wacha that you just mentioned, and that's Cal Quantrill. He's not available in a lot of leagues, but he had a second half improvements that the K to walk, the pitch mix, stuff like that. So that's a pretty awesome stuff as well. Any other pitchers here? Like there's the Gores, there's the Brashers, the young guys that, you know, you might put a bid in for Sunday night and they might get cut or sent down on Tuesday or Wednesday. So it's like, you got to kind of maybe put a 5%er out there, but I wouldn't go crazy. At the same time, we saw how good Mackenzie Gore is and he could make a massive difference in a rotation. So it's a tricky spot to be in knowing that it could go up in flames within like 48 hours.
I was just going to say, like, Gore is the one. So we had a question on Brash, and I would throw in like a buck or two on Brash. I think for Seattle, he's got really good stuff. I don't know, like you said, Bubba, he could be down in Tacoma next week, but there's at least a chance it's not going to cost you anything. The thing with Gore, at this point, we don't know if he has a rotation spot. He's making a hell of a case for San Diego to go to a six-man rotation. Yeah. And if that does happen, or there's an injury, or I don't know, like Snell gets delayed or pushed back or whatever, there's going to be some interesting bids for Mackenzie Gore, because similar to the pedigree, the velocity, the spring training results, and a lot of in-person scouting reports that say this looks like a totally new guy, and in a good way. So I would be willing to open up the wallet a little bit on Mackenzie Gore if I know that he has a rotation spot by Sunday. If he doesn't, I'm dialing it back a little bit.
Yeah, stay very, very close to the news. So that's all I have to say is, and one thing that Twitter is the cesspool that it is, it can be utilized very well in a quick search button. You can just type in Mackenzie Gore and you will get all kinds of stuff. You have to navigate through the trash, but you'll find the news in there as well. And I do it all the time.
You can also, you can search, and then you can also, there's a little filter by people you follow. And unless you, depending on who you follow, it filters out the trash.
True. Yeah, there's some of the trash. And then I think Curlin put together like a beat writer group you can join. It just has all beat writers in it. I think it's Kevin AC or RC. I think he's your San Diego guy. So go follow him. You'll be fine. But that kind of does it for the pitchers here. Let's talk some bats. And like you mentioned, it's not like great like Jake Fraley. Obviously, new team. Still questionable now that Pham's there. Like, where does Fraley slot in there? A week ago, we were all about it. Got Christian Walker, who's crushing baseballs. Got your A's guys that might get all kinds of run now that when drafts were taking place, not so much. So let's just kind of kick it off with Christian Walker is an interesting one because he's going free or almost undrafted in some leagues. And in last year was not great, but now he's bounced back in a big way. If you need a corner infield guy, maybe you have Brandon Belt and now you don't know what you're doing because he doesn't know what he's doing with his knee. So are you going after a guy like Christian Walker, hoping these spring training gains continue?
Yeah, I mean, in labor, for example, I've got Evan Longoria at corner. So yeah. Christian Walker is absolutely someone who I would be looking at just because he looks pretty good so far. And yes, like you're kind of fading the dip that was 2021, which was, like a pretty terrible season, hitting .244 with 10 homers in 401 at-bats. But you look at the 2019 track record, the 2020 track record, like this is a lot better hitter than what we saw. And in 2021, he's still just his age 31 season. So I'm not saying Christian Walker is going to break out, but he's going to play pretty much every day on a pretty bad Arizona team. And when you're looking at Fab and you're just trying to fill some holes with bodies, Christian Walker is easily the top corner infielder and, top infielder in general for me in this Fab run.
Yeah, I've told many people on like recap shows of our season from last year, and Walker was a guy I was heavily invested in going into last season. I thought there was legit things there, and it just not so much. So
there was reason to think that, though. I mean, like I said, two straight years of pretty good, not just results, but underlying skills too. He still owns that.
Yeah, that's and we're seeing it right now. So that's why I'm intrigued as well. I'm with you on that one. I mentioned Jake Fraley. You got Fraley, guys like other outfielders like Peralta, Aaron Hicks, who I'm honestly shocked, only 42%. He was like a huge target of mine early in draft season just because he's on the Yankees. He's going to play. Like that one surprised me a bit. Gavin Sheets, only utility only now, but he might go get outfield eligibility pretty soon. Matt Vierling got traded. Or no, he didn't get traded. Halsey got traded, giving Matt Vierling potentially a job. So what are some of these outfielders that stand out to you in a position where starting five of them and there's a good chance somebody on your roster is not where you thought they'd be right about now?
Yeah, I was also surprised by the Aaron Hicks thing. I mean, the big knock, obviously, with Hicks is health, but he's at least healthy right now. So worst case is, he gets hurt in a couple weeks and then he's a drop. But he's healthy heading into opening day, and thus he has a starting gig. And we're projecting at HQ, even in part-time duty, just because we're kind of assuming an injury in his projection over the full season, but we're projecting 20 homers, seven steals, 233 batting average, which isn't that great, but Aaron Hicks might be able to get you some bombs and bags and in that lineup, some counting stats. So as long as Aaron Hicks is healthy and available, I think he's a fine fifth outfielder. And even in 12s, I think as long as he's playing and you need somebody to fill in the outfield, he's one of the few who stands out, especially like Jake Fraley. So we go by, this is going by the main event ADP. Fraley's going the earliest technically in mains with that 375. I just don't know how much, how many plate appearances you're going to get out of Fraley. I think long-term for the whole season, I'd probably take Fraley over Aaron Hicks. I just don't know these first couple weeks, if Fraley has a regular gig, whereas Aaron Hicks definitely does until he gets hurt.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like the Yankees, they got Boston and then Toronto and then at Baltimore, at Detroit. So nice little starting point there for Hicks company. I know Boston and Toronto are good teams, but you know, you got some hittable guys in there. Toronto, if it's projected correct, Manoah, Kikuchi, Berríos, and Gausman. That is not a fun 4 days. But give me that Baltimore series. Hicks might have a lot of fun there. That's for sure. A couple other guys here. Jose Iglesias, obviously, wasn't even on a team when we drafted. Now he's a starting shortstop for the Colorado Rockies, which becomes quite intriguing. Like, most people still probably scoff at the name Jose Iglesias, but let's be real. He's going to play every day. Half his games in Colorado. There's going to be viability for that as a middle infielder on some deep leagues. So are you looking to maybe snag a guy like Jose Iglesias, or you'd rather go for a veteran like Didi Gregorius before Bryson Stott maybe pushes him out of the way?
Probably I'm not that high on Iglesias, just but especially early season. I mean, we think Coors, but Coors in April can be pretty rough, pretty blustery. The monthly park factors for Coors, I think, get overlooked a lot. Once the weather heats up in the summer, it's an elite park. When it's snowing in April, not so much. One guy who sticks out, at least by the HQ projections, and this was funny because in Tout Wars, there's a 12-team AL league, and there are four baseball HQers in Tout Wars.
Same league?
Patrick Davitt, Doug Dennis, and Chris Blessing. And a lot of us are using RotoLab and looking at HQ projections. And Kevin Smith is someone who the HQ projections absolutely love. We've got Kevin Smith in 338 at-bats, projected for 12 homers and 11 steals. That's really good. We love the power speed combo for Kevin Smith. Chris Blessing has some reservations about Kevin Smith's ability to stick even on a shaky Oakland lineup this season long term. But if Kevin Smith has an everyday gig, that's somebody too who I would be at least putting in a modest bid for to see what happens. Age 26 guy, does not have much major league experience, but like I said, the projections at HQ are super rosy on Kevin Smith. So that's another guy who if you need steals, and who doesn't, that's someone who could chip in a bag or two this first week.
Yeah, he's very intriguing because he's got that power speed in the minors. They showcased pretty good so far this spring in 25 plate appearances. He's got a double and a homer. He's hitting 250, stolen base, 5 Ks. Honestly, I take that pretty positively, only 5 strikeouts. I'm like, okay, we could work with that. He's young. Let's see what happens there. So that is definitely something we could, his opponent quality is about 7.4. So close to, double A, triple A guys he's facing. So I'm with you.
Which is a really cool stat, by the way, not to cut you off, but the opponent quality, that's Baseball Reference, I believe, is where that comes from. And that's super useful because you can't just look at a stat line and see who it came against, especially early in spring. There's some names out there that level of competition is you're facing equivalent to double A sometimes. So it's important to check that out. So Baseball Reference, glad you mentioned that, Bubba. That's something I look
very,
at a lot.
Very helpful to, like you said, let you know, are they hitting single A pitchers or at least, competent? Are they starting games or getting the cleanup duty? Is that what we're getting here? But the other guy, if you are looking for third base, like you mentioned, Longo's going to be out for a while. Maybe you need a third baseman. Kevin Smith fits that mold. But another guy you have on this list, and I know I grabbed him as like a third or fourth catcher on a lot of DCs, is Andy Ibañez of the Texas Rangers. And I think it's just interesting for the fact is there's been some beat report. I think it was Levi Walker of the Athletic was talking to like the hitting coach for the Rangers. And they said if he can, they said if Ibanez can just play consistently defensively, that's their concern. He's hit at every level we've ever had him at. They're not concerned about that. So as long as he can play defense, there's a great chance he is your everyday third baseman in Texas. Like when that, when the whole thing went down, when they're moving guys around, IKF and everything, it was like, okay, is it going to be Solak? Is it going to be this? Because they weren't going to bring anybody in when John got hurt. Well, it looks like it's going to be Andy Ibanez. And we've seen some pros and cons, a little bit in the bigs, but a ton in the minors. So he's a guy that, that also, if you can't get Kevin Smith, you maybe just want to spend a buck or two. Like you could probably get a bond is pretty cheap unless you got some really, really savvy people in your league. So I just wanted to highlight him. I think he's a really good one to target in this one.
Yep. In the forecaster, we gave Ibanez an upside of a 280 batting average and 25 home runs. So, I mean, that's not our base projection by any means, but that's kind of if a couple things go right and he does fall into playing time and has the skills to deliver a plus batting average, that's a great call. And yeah, as of today, he is our starting third baseman in Texas as well. And it's a name that no one really talks about and I don't think will cost you more than a buck or two in your thing. So there's definitely like if there's a spot to be hurt or if there's a spot you need, corner infield's it with Walker, with Ibanez, and with Kevin Smith, like and you can set up, and I know this is kind of maybe this is basic for some folks, but set up especially like in NFBC, it's got a really great interface for Fab where you can set up conditional bids and you know maybe you have Walker first for $5 or $10 on a $1,000 budget, and then you can conditional down to Kevin Smith or Ibanez to like $2 or $1 or whatever you want to do. But that's important to do as well as in NFBC to kind of conditional it down, and it'll give you the one you want in the order that you get as long as it's the most money.
And I did want to mention because I like we've referenced you know Longo or injured guys or something. It's also say you drafted a dude that all of a sudden is like the fourth or fifth outfielder. Like just and you don't have a need for like an Ibanez or a Walker right now, it's still better to stash them than the other person. So it's like the old idea of don't be afraid to drop a guy just because he quote unquote still has a job. Well, his job might not be worth a whole lot where Walker's gonna start every day. Ibanez might start every day. So these guys can slide right on in barring an injury in like an NFBC format when you can do your offense from Monday through Thursday and Friday through Sunday, you'd be surprised how often you mix those guys in and out. Even just looking at the opening schedule, it's like almost a third of the league doesn't play on Thursday. So if you're drafting really late and you want to get real crafty, you could legit just draft like with your late picks, guys that play on Thursday, start them that one day and then change your whole lineup for Friday through Sunday. So like it sounds silly, but Ryan's smirking because he knows what I'm talking about. You just get those little at bats. If that guy goes 1-for-4 with like 2 RBIs and a run scored, you'd be surprised that that little bit can make a difference as like the season goes along. So I wanted to bring that up to when I was looking at the schedule. Yep.
I mean, me cashing in my main event last year came down to Raisel Iglesias in a meaningful game against Seattle. This is why I remember this so vividly is because there was so much on the line. Came down to that final inning. So like, yes. And that's part of the, I mean, that's not part. That is the grind of, you know, everyone says the grind of Fab and fantasy baseball. It's a humbling sport, but like the more you can kind of grind out each additional game and at bat over the course of a season, that stuff adds up big time. So
yeah, because it sounds silly to many. It sounded silly for me for a long time, but like the last like X amount of years where I started playing a little more in FBC and seeing kind of how it works and the way your lineup construction and everything, I thought, you know, innings, everyone goes, it's all about innings pitched and plate appearances. Like you said, I'm like, that's silly. Like, why do I want these bad plate appearances? It's just like, okay, well, he might affect your average, but what he can do in other areas, it like, it all adds up in the end. And you'd be surprised. You hear guys like Rob DiPietro and others talk about it because they really dig into like league winners and stuff. And they'll tell you exactly like where this person finished in plate appearances. And like, they don't even care about the other stats. Those guys all finish pretty high for the most part, and there's a reason for it. So it's the grind, as Ryan said, and it's not for everybody because I know I fail at it many times, but if you can put it together, it's pretty strong. We've got like Seth Brown, Garrett Cooper. You got some catchers in Higashioka, Ryan Jeffers. Anybody else you're looking to really target on this first Fab period? Because like you mentioned, hitters-wise, it's not the greatest thing. It's maybe just kind of mix and match some holes.
Yep. No, that's pretty much it. I mean, no one else. Like maybe we've got like Stephen Kwan, who's 440 ADP right now in the outfield, potentially playing for the Guardians, but even that is not a sure thing. So, yeah, the general takeaway, like, yeah, if you need a catcher, like, I mean, and you drafted a retired Buster Posey, like, yeah, you need to fill the hole with somebody, but like, yeah, Higashioka or Jeffers, I wouldn't spend any more than kind of the minimum just to hope you squeeze an extra game or two out of it. Do not go too aggressive on these guys this early, just because there's plenty of fab madness to come this season.
And I think the moral of the story is unless we miss someone or something random happens the next week, there's not a lot of guys to break the bank for, so don't be crazy. Like, if you somehow don't get Mackenzie Gore, if he comes back to ruin your season, well, that probably was just not meant to be, is the way I'd look at it. You're going to need those bullets throughout the season, so don't go throwing them out early on these. Use these to kind of just fill in the blanks until something really serious happens.
The lesson of Julian Merriweather.
Yeah, that's I can go on a whole saves lessons all day long. It's a learning thing. A very, very you learn from your mistakes. Let's put it that way.
To be fair, that's a totally different example. That was someone who we thought had the role for Toronto, and
well, he technically did, but he got hurt. So. Like he didn't lose the job because of performance. He lost it because he got hurt.
There is no one like that in this fab, especially for closers.
No, it's all speculative stuff. It's nothing locked in stone, as you said, unless we get new news. So pay attention to the news, folks. Maybe Dave Roberts flat out goes, Daniel Hudson is my guy. And then you're like, okay, now we're spending money. Now we go. Pay attention to that. Let's get some listener questions here, because you guys kicked butt on this again. Like, keep them coming all the time. But Whole Camels at Cy Cease asks, and you kind of hit on it already, so I guess we don't really have to go too deep into it, but any upside with Michael Wacha? I remember him showing up on Bloom boards before, but can't remember which. So you mentioned the K to walks, the pitch mix change. Say we don't have a draft yet. Like, say they're still drafting. Like, you have some coming up. I have a couple of OCs still to go. His main event ADP right now is 396.
Yep.
How much would you jump him?
I would jump. So 396 is like the 26th round. I'd probably go like 23rd, 24th, just to make sure I get him.
Okay.
Wouldn't go too much earlier, just because at that point you're still trying to fill out your starting roster. But yeah, something like that is where I'd jump somebody like Wacha.
Man, if this is the rotation we see to start the season, which it probably should be with Boston, and you might have said it already, I apologize, but he could get at Detroit that Monday and then at home versus Minnesota.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Wow. And he probably
said that, so I apologize, but man, no. I just saw it in front of me. I'm like, oh my goodness.
No, I didn't. No, you're good. Cause yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. Wacha gets to miss those three games because I believe Wacha is going to be the fourth starter. And again,
if he's the fourth, he gets that Monday, Sunday.
Yep. So he could go Monday, Sunday at Detroit versus Minnesota and skip the Yankees. So like, I don't know, maybe that's a really good point. Maybe I do go an extra round earlier just because of that, that sexy two-step in week two. That's a really good point.
Yeah, like I'm in a slow draft right now in round like 27. I might need to go see if Michael Wacha is sitting there still. That might be one I need to go peruse for a minute, because I'll enjoy that two-step. Joe Patelski asked at Sturge Clerg. This was the other news question I was going to mention, but we left it here. Josh Harrison, what is his upside now that he has a full-time – they announced him as a starting second baseman, and I already loved him because he's second base, third base, outfield. So you get middle, corner, outfield eligibility, which is a unicorn almost. And Harrison's pretty darn good. Like, he's not elite, but he's a very, very serviceable ball player. So I like him a lot. What are your projections saying with a guy like Josh Harrison?
Projections for HQ are strong, so we are projecting a full-time role for Harrison, not just because he is the starter at second base, but like you said, Bubba, he can play everywhere, so we've got him projected for some time at basically every infield position except catcher, and then a little bit in outfield as well. So we've got him at 15 homers, 11 steals, and a .270 batting average, and so that's, you know, modest five category production in a Chicago lineup that is really strong. Like, granted, Harrison's going to hit towards the bottom of that lineup, as he should, but I expect them to score some runs and turn that lineup over enough to where Harrison gets pretty good amount of at bats. And yeah, the skills are fine. Like the strikeout rate is elite, actually, for Harrison. The power was down on the surface last year, a 5% homer to fly ball rate, which is super low. But our power metrics at HQ were almost league average, which would put that homer to fly at least double, so at least up to 10%, if you know all luck context taken into account. So yes, Josh Harrison for that reason is I really, you know, he's not a breakout guy, but he's somebody who is going to be super useful throughout the season for not only being balanced from a position standpoint, but also being balanced from a category standpoint. So I paid, I believe, $10 for Harrison in AL labor, just because I figured when they signed him, he would get the job over Lurie Garcia. And looks like that happened. So yeah, like not a guy that's going to win your league or whatever. I kind of feel like he's kind of the old, like the new, like Estrubel Cabrera, who no one really talks about him, but he just puts up production, puts up $10-$15 production at zero cost. So yeah, love that. Love that landing spot. Love the versatility and love the category versatility as well.
Yeah, he's an Estrubel Cabrera, Ben Zobrist type. Not going to knock your socks off, but he's going to be pretty darn solid. And he's projected to hit the bottom of the order, but maybe he starts to lead off the first two games with Timmy Anderson out. We'll see how that one plays out too. That could be fun to sneak out a couple more at bats. Joe had another question. Dark horse save candidates. He's got Alex Lang, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Spencer Strider. Man, I don't have a lot of dark horse save candidates, to be honest with you. Like Art Warren, but he's not a dark horse. He's most of my guys are pretty much talked about for me, unless you, Emilio Pagan's one I'm starting to fall in love with. Let's put it that way.
Speaking of deja vu, it was about a year ago now where we all thought Emilio Pagan was the guy, and he's not. So Joe, I know Joe knows the, and Joe used to write for HQ back in the day, but I know Joe knows Texas bullpen really well. That's somewhere where I would be interested. It doesn't sound like it's going to be Barlow. It sounds like it might be some combination of like Spencer Patton or maybe like Greg Holland.
Holland is back again. It's crazy. It's ridiculous. He just keeps coming back. He's like a gremlin.
Maybe if you're going to take a stab at one of those guys. Outside of that, the San Diego bullpen would be another place where I'd at least try and target, just because that's a team that's going to win. And I don't know if it's going to be a committee. I just think we haven't, you know, they haven't tipped their hand. And so, Bubba, you mentioned Pagan. Another guy we talked about him a little bit last week, was Robert Suarez. It sounds like it's down to those two guys.
Yep.
I was reading Greg Jewett's reliever recon updates this earlier today, and his team had mentioned that. So I'd take a stab at maybe like a Robert Suarez or a Pagan, or maybe both if it's cheap enough and you can kind of hedge both of those guys, just because that is a bullpen that I would want to be in on. And I do think there's an inkling, even though there are a lot of guys in the mix, I don't know if it'll necessarily be a committee. I feel like they might just pick a guy and go with him until either performance or injury. So those are two guys, Suarez and Pagan.
Those two for sure. And then a couple more that, as I'm staring at Greg's closers charts here, one I drafted a lot of late round shares of in DC's is Nick Sandlin from Cleveland. If God forbid something happens to Emmanuel Clase, Sandlin can be sneaky interesting in that role. And then the other one, because Deadpool hitter, Mr. Pietro himself, has been all over him, keep an eye on Hector Neris in Houston with the Presley concerns. And like they've mentioned, they paid him a lot of money. So Hector Neris could be one you could get basically free right now. And that's one that could – he's got closing experience, so that would not shock me one bit.
Presley's velocity has been down, and I know Presley, like this time last year, Presley, there were spring training concerns. He had like no one had actually heard from him. He was just
hiding in the backfield.
Yeah. And he turned out to be fine. But whatever. I mean, if you take a stab and Hector Neris, it doesn't work out, just cut, move on. And I mean, that's the life of speculating for saves. So, yeah, definitely like Hector Neris, especially with that team. You know, Houston, there should be plenty of save ops if something happened to Presley. Doesn't sound too concerned, but of course that's what the spin's going to be. So we'll see what he looks like in his next start here, or his next appearance.
Will Garofalo has two questions for us. So we'll kick it off with the first one here. It's a good question because we all have our different inadequacies, as I'll say. What's your biggest challenge in season as a manager?
I've got a resolution, man. I really resolve to not stare at my phone every night and watch live scoring. It is addicting. And
how often do you get yelled at for that? Because I get it often.
All the time. I cannot turn off my phone. I can't not watch it. I know it's meaningless. I know I have no control over it, but I cannot get that little MLB app off my phone and wait till the next freaking dot shows up in the strike zone.
In-play run
shows up. And that like 30 seconds after in-play run shows up. And then between when that shows up and when the actual result of the play is like the craziest 30 seconds of any addicted fantasy baseball player. So my biggest weakness, to get back to Will's question, is the thing I want to avoid is to do that. Easier said than done. Like, if I spend half the time prepping fab as I do tracking live scoring, something again I have no control over, I would be a lot better fantasy player than I am. So that's my thing, is I want to try to, I know it's not going to work, I know it's not going to happen, but I want to try and control the things I can control and avoid the things I can't, which is kind of a life lesson too, but in fantasy as well. But yeah, you'll see me, I'll be, you know, Saturday night, I'll be on the couch sitting there and kids will be down and I'll have MLB game day up. I know I will.
Oh yeah. We all do. We're all guilty of it. It's the only reason why I pay the extra like $9.99 so I can get the live scoring fee. I do it every year. It's clockwork, but, yeah, it's what we do. It's our addiction. I guess it's, there's worse addictions out there. Let's put it that way. Yeah. But, yeah, that's a good one. And you kind of hit on the correlation there is, I say it every year and it's still like a, just a mystery. I want to become better at fab, like the extra time into it to find like the things we talked about, go get those guys for extra plate appearances. Hey, this guy's got, you know, four games in the beginning of the week that are gonna be huge, or, you know, in next week, these guys are in Coors, like little things like that. Get ahead of the game so you can really make a big difference. Cause you hear some of these guys talk about it and there's reasons these guys win a lot is they're on stuff like that. Like crazy. It helps that they have their own little chat groups of like four of them that are always messaging each other with. You hear about these super groups, but that would be something for like, you talk about just Phil Dussault. He tells you how he looks at stuff almost like a month out sometimes. The dude's literally a robot. It's insane. So I'd love to be like a quarter of that possibly.
The thing I'll add to that too is not just to focus more on fab, but focus on like your fab process, especially like now, especially we have, I know we've got fab coming up this Sunday, but it's a relatively light run and who knows what the week after will be, but we'll only have what, three games to go off of. So next week's run, probably a little bit more action, but maybe not too much. So we have in this moment, we have 2 to 3 weeks that you're not going to have during the season to just kind of sit back and think, you know, what data do I want to look at for fab? What does my process want to be? And at least try and put something like that in place, as opposed to, it's kind of that work smarter, not harder kind of thing where, you know, you're kind of in fab, you're kind of just trying to survive every week. But now we've got that 2 to 3 week window where you can kind of sit back. Most of your drafts are done. Think about what your in-season process is going to be. And try and fine tune that right now before we really get into that grind with like the April, kind of mid-April fab periods is what I would add to that as well.
Good point. Very, very good point. He also asked, what is your favorite post 300 ADP player this draft season?
Ooh. I got to pull up my sheet. That's a good question. 300. I always think like, I always have trouble equating 300 or 400, 300 to like an actual round. So I'm trying to think like which rounds I go. I don't know.
It'd be post round 20 because 150. Post round 20 of 15er.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm scrolling through post 300 ADPs. I think I have a lot of Moustakas for some reason. I was very bullish on Moustakas, but there's some interesting ones here. I'd say one that might burn me now as things have changed, but if you want to talk about shares, okay, this one, I have a lot of shares. Tony Kemp, love Tony Kemp, leading off for the A's. Super late, outfield, second base. I do have a lot of shares of Tony Kemp. I've been drafting him late in 12s right now just for the flexibility. Late in the draft, because I believe he could be a kind of sneaky good 15-ish homer guy with 15 plus steals. Like it could be an interesting combo there from Tony Kemp.
I'll go pitching side, a couple guys. I'm going a little bit earlier than 300, but whatever. Huascar Ynoa for Atlanta is someone who I'm really on. And again, looking at the schedule, he is someone who might line up. If he's the fifth starter with Atlanta, he might line up to face Washington next Monday. Another guy who has looked good this spring. Hope it works out for just a feel good story, but Carlos Carrasco, I know he's kind of rising up boards right now and is within the top 300, but that's someone who I'm really targeting kind of that mid late rotation as well, just because the that ace is still lives within him. It's just, can he get the volume? And so far this spring, it's been really good for him.
Yeah, I don't know why I've kind of just zoned out on him. I guess I've been burned so much in the past, but I've always been a huge Cookie fan. Always a big Cookie fan. The dude's awesome. So rooting for him, that's for sure. The Doc, Mike Carter, asks, what pitcher do you have the most shares of this year?
The most, actually, so far the most, and I don't know if this is the right way to do it because it's earlier in drafts, but Trevor Rogers is tied for the most. I have been, and I've said this multiple times, but my general strategy this year has been to wait a little bit on starting pitching and go like that sixth, seventh round before taking my first starter and then going early SP2, SP3 to make up for it. Trevor Rogers has been an integral part of that plan and has looked really good this spring so far. So that part is good. He's kind of flashed a slider. I think he made Pitching Ninja earlier today, in addition to that fastball changeup combo, which is one of the best in baseball. So Trevor Rogers is one of my more highly rostered guys, which again, you kind of want to not, you want to diversify late in the draft and not early, but we'll see how Mr. Rogers treats me this year.
Yeah, I pulled up my player shares page, and I'm not surprised by this, but we'll see how well this pans out. But my most rostered pitcher is Dane Dunning. I have a lot of Dane Dunning shares. Michael Simeone actually tweeted out good things about him today, so that makes you feel a little better about life. But I love the baby steps he took last year as the Rangers basically babied him for like 4 to 5 innings every start, but they already said they're going to let him go this year. The strikeout stuff is pretty darn solid. It's just a matter of putting it all together, and he looked to get better and better as the season went on. Great ballpark to pitch in, super late in drafts. So I've taken a lot of chances on a guy like Dane Dunning too. Hopefully people will forget that he was a part of that Giolito trade for Chris Sale. So let's not forget that one either. So I'll take my chances on Dane Dunning. Like Mike Carter also said, who are your most shares, your hitters with the most shares?
Hitter most shares. Let's see what I got. Charlie Blackman.
I like that.
Not surprisingly. I've been a Charlie Blackman guy for forever, but the price is super cheap this year. And so, the thing with Blackman is like, it's a profile that, it's kind of a dime or dozen. He's not going to run anymore, but if you are getting speed early, which I think is the play this year, there's a bunch of those guys late. And Charlie Blackman, I think the average, I think he's going to hit high in Colorado's lineup, which is still a fine lineup. And Chris Bryant's there. I think that'll work out fine. And just the skills are still there. Yes, he's in decline. Yes, he's getting older. But I can see Blackman hitting over 280 with like 25 homers and going in the 17th round.
Driving like 90 runs and scoring like 75. Yeah.
And getting like 600, over 600 plate appearances. Yeah. That's someone who just like, as people go up, other folks fall. And Charlie Blackman is just that kind of boring veteran. That's someone who I'm not surprised I have the most shares of right now.
Yeah. He's one of those guys that I didn't start the draft season on him, but the more I researched, the more I talked through things, I've slowly been adding him quite a bit in my later drafts. I'm with you 100%. I don't mind the boring player, so I'm all aboard that train. If you want to talk boring players, I'll get my top two share guys because one's on 58%, one's on 53% of my leagues, and they coincide on the same ball club. So sadly, I'm going to be watching a lot of Tigers games this year. So my most rostered hitter is Robbie Grossman because I want that power speed combo late. And he's still. I'm actually kind of surprised how late he's going for how much people pay for speed. Like, do I expect 20-20? That's probably pushing it. But you can easily get 15-15, I think, with him with the upside to go 20-20, which at his ADP is pretty solid. The other guy I have is his teammate, Jonathan Scope, who I am in love with because he hits for a 270, 280 average almost every single season, 20-plus home runs every single season. He's going to play every day, first base, second base eligible. So I'm a sucker for those two guys later in drafts. As you like, for roster construction purposes, they just like fit the mold for me at least very well. And I'll sadly be watching a lot of Tigers games this year.
I don't think there's a weirder like career path than Robbie Grossman and stolen bases. Like had pretty much 20 career steals through his first like six seasons. Now those were partial seasons or whatever. But now that he's age 32, he's had 37 steals in his last three seasons with a stolen base success rate over 8% in each of the last two seasons in his 30s. Like that is crazy. Bizarre. But yeah, I see why. I mean, Grossman's going at a point in the draft where speed, like there are not really any speed guys, and Grossman's not going to hurt you in power for sure. He's not going to hurt your counting stats. He'll hurt you a little bit in batting average, but yeah, that makes sense. Again, not a sexy guy, boring veteran going later, but going to rack up plate appearances. I mean, we just described Charlie Blackmon, like yep. This is a similar type guy, just with more speed, less batting average.
Definitely. Some guy named Justin Mason asked, why is Cedric Mullins the best?
I can't answer that because he's not.
Only Justin can.
Justin can.
He's in the eye of the beholder, as they say, Justin. So I can't help you.
Fascinated to see what Mullins says this year.
I am too, because I have a couple shares. If he fell late third, early fourth, like, okay, I'll take my chances. But yep. I was never paying that second round price he was getting early on. Never.
Yep. And I know, like, away. I mean, the fantasy community is smart. Like, no one's projecting 30-30. No, very few are even projecting 25-25. So, like, we're smart, and we know regression's probably coming. It's just this is always the toughest thing to crack for me, is when you do have these kind of one-year breakout guys where the skills basically completely back everything up, and you had the kind of the change in going away from switch hitter. So like I don't have any of Cedric Mullins, but I'm just fascinated to see what happens to him this year. It's gonna be gonna be fascinating.
And Justin just needs to not draft Cedric Mullins and wait and draft Joe Adell. That's what he needs to do. That's the answer, but we'll wait and see on that. Jay Mitz asks, Matt Brash, does he win the AL Rookie of the Year? I don't think so.
I don't think so. But
not with the guys that are coming up with that swing of bat right now. I don't think so.
I think his teammate might, but yeah. But I don't think Brash. Mm-hmm. That said, I mean, we talked about Brash in the Fab segment. Looks really good right now. Worth a buck or two in Fab, and in the off chance he makes the rotation, because the stuff is there. The prospect guys at HQ are all over Brash and have been for a little while. So a little bit under the radar, but yeah, someone who I'm going to be putting on some conditional bids this weekend for sure.
Yeah, I think Julio, Riley Green, Bobby Witt, I think they have the upper hand on that one. But yeah, I'm with you. Brash could be fun.
Julio.
I would love it to be Julio, because I started drafting him pretty aggressively like 2 weeks ago, and I'm like, oh, it's starting to happen. Like once there's bugs.
The later we go into spring training, the longer he's on the team.
Yeah, then I started getting confidence.
It's happening.
I usually never draft prospects. I'm like, I'm not going to play the game. But this one all of a sudden looked like, okay, this is happening. Like this is happening here. Hey, we have a guy that just missed us answering a Cedric Mullins question. Justin Mason entered the chat. He says, hey, guys. So, Justin, we don't know about Cedric Mullins. Can't help you there. We don't even know who he is. But Drew asks, any hitters or pitchers with good early season schedules that you like? We hit on some two-star guys earlier.
Yeah, we hit on a couple two-star guys. Cincinnati actually is going their first series is away, so they start with four at Atlanta, which for their lefties is probably okay, but that's a tough staff. And then they get two at home against Cleveland, then four at LA, which is going to be brutal. So that's kind of a tough, and especially for a team that is so ballpark dependent, that's a tough start for Cincinnati. The Marlins have a decent hitter schedule at San Francisco, which I never thought I would say, but that park's a lot more hitter friendly. And then a couple at the Angels, and then the following week against Philadelphia. So that's not too bad either. Pittsburgh actually goes to St. Louis, and then two at home against Chicago, and then four at home against Washington. So like Pittsburgh hitters next week is our hitters, and there will be Pittsburgh hitters available on most waiver wires. Those are guys that you might want to plan for next week. It's a 7-game week against two pretty bad rotations. So those are a couple that stood out to me.
No, those make a lot of sense. You could always look at you got the Padres bats if they are out there anywhere. Maybe CJ Abrams makes a starting spot or something, but you got those Arizona games coming up. The Giants after is not the best, but you got that opening series of the opening weekend against Arizona. It could be a juicy one. Bumgarner, Merrill Kelly, an injured Zach Gallen, Luke Weaver, who left with an injury. Who knows who they're throwing out there? That could be a fun one as well. Next up, we have a few more questions to go here. JLD asks, thoughts on Jesus Sanchez?
Yeah. I like him. And it sounds like Sanchez he's going to play every day. The arrow's trending up is what we put in the forecast. Right, 24 home runs last year between AAA and the majors. And so, yeah, like the strikeouts are an issue. 66% contact rate is not that great. But the power's legit. I think there's a little bit of speed. He didn't run last year at all, but I think there's some of that there, and I think he can hit repeat maybe 250. So at Jesus Sanchez's ADP, like right around, I believe 200. Let's see, in mains, I think he's at 235. So he's going at a point in the draft where you're just kind of filling out your outfield. And for somebody who definitely held his own in his first go around against major league pitching, especially with the hard contact, that's someone who's in his age 24 season, you know, these guys can grow very quickly. It's not linear. So there could be some growth there as well. I would like to see the strikeout rate improve. It actually went up even more in the second half. So that's one little thing against him, but the raw power looks great. He's going to play every day.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Going to hit fifth or sixth in that Miami Marlins lineup. That's actually improved with Abascal and Soler and stuff. So it's not a bad little spot to be in. And I do agree. Something you mentioned there, I think there's more speed than we saw last year. I think it is there. So you might sneak into like eight-ish steals, maybe. I'm not going to say 10. That's like a bar to cross. Maybe 8-ish, which at that point is pretty nice with 25 jacks. So you can play with that. Matt Olson, not the Matt Olson, but Matt Olson at Moles 10 asks, in a salary keeper league, same each team keeps 7 to 10 players with inflation, how much do you pay up in the auction or target cheap bargains? In my opinion, cheap bargains are good for future keeper value and or better in-season trade bait. So do you approach, like, do you try to pay a little extra for the cheaper bargains so you can use them later, basically, or do you just pay up and get studs?
Yeah, so we had our so I'm in a home keeper league here in Oregon. It's a 7x7 league. It's crazy categories. I always say every year we need to get back down to 5x5, but it's 7x7, whatever. It's fun. It's a great group. We had our auction last weekend, and it's a similar type structure where it's auction, and then you can keep and sign guys at contracts based on what you bought them for at the auction. I'm very much a proponent of going stars and scrubs. There's super inflation on the keepers. Like I spent, I think, $52 on George Springer. I mean, that's what the inflation. Rotolab had him at 60. With inflation. So, yeah. And the category, again, category is a little different. Like walks is one of the categories and stuff like that. But just an example, like I go very heavy stars and scrubs because like George Springer, I'm not going to keep next year at 50. Like I got to have to keep him for like $55 or whatever the following year. But I try and backfill those inflated guys with the $1-$2 end game auction guys, just because if those hit, I can sign those guys to 3-year contracts at $1, then $2, then $3, and you kind of hit that gold mine for your keepers. So I think the kind of the worst thing to do in that type of format is to spread the risk and get a bunch of like $15, $20 guys, just because the keeper price the following year, if they hit, isn't that great. So definite stars and scrubs. And it did feel weird saying 52 for Springer last year in that league. I took Trout for 70. So That did not work out. Finished third because of that, but not bitter at all.
That's why it's so fun how different leagues are out there. How many different leagues are out there? It's crazy because I don't do very many auctions. I haven't done an auction point in a couple of years. I still follow them because I can understand, you know, dollar values and transitioning them over. I think you can learn a lot from that, from a dollar value scenario. So yeah, that's interesting. I like the Stars and Scrubs seems to be the way to go more often than not, but it's not for everybody if you don't know the scrubby part of things. Let's put it that way.
Yep, you got to put in the work on the scrubs to make sure that at least some of those guys work out.
Final question we have here. Lil Book of Calm asks, when do we see McKenzie Gore on the 26th man? Does he come up as a starter? We kind of hit on him earlier. First off, you get 28 guys to start the season. And the Padres are going to be hurting for pitching. And I think if he has one more good start like we've seen so far this year, this spring, I think they got to start him up there. That's my two cents, but what do you say?
I feel like two things could happen if he makes the major league roster. And I kind of hit on the first one, which is like San Diego could go for a six-man rotation. The other thing that could happen, I talked about this a little bit with the schedule, is maybe McKenzie Gore is that kind of long man in the middle of of games, and maybe they piggyback like a Blake Snell, who, like I said, is only probably going to go 3-4 innings his first couple starts. Do you piggyback him with McKenzie Gore? And then at that point, McKenzie Gore, just because the chances for a win are so great, becomes really interesting. But Gore is pitching his way in onto the roster, especially with expanded rosters. I think he'll be there and probably in one of those two roles, either the six starter role or a long man. And the last thing that I'll say too, with six starters, like those guys always end up getting jobs. Like Tyler McGill for the Mets was the sixth starter, and when they traded for Chris Bassitt, like McGill's stock dropped. And five chances for pitcher injuries ahead of you, like those six starters always get a shot. It's just a matter of when. So super interested to see what Gore does, but I feel like he's going to start on the team in one of those two roles.
Yeah, that's I'm with you. I think at worst he starts on the team. How it gets worked out's the question. But you also hit on something else. There's like we used to make fun of like the Dodgers and stuff. Oh, they have like nine starting pitchers. What are they going to do? Injuries happen in bunches. Like everybody's going to get their shot at some point in time. It's just when. Are they still on your roster? How much do you have to fab them for? Those are the fun questions. Like as a Giants fan, I've already said it. You can literally see all five guys having one or two stints on the IL, even if it's just for maintenance, because that's how all their pitchers, they're all strong pitchers, but Wood, Cobb, even Webb, you just go through that rotation. You're hoping for like 150 to 160. If you can get that, you're over the moon, and that requires time on the IL. You're going to see a lot of teams do that. That's just the brass tacks of it all, and that's where guys like Gore and others will come in and get their shot. So we'll see how that one pans out.
And the last thing, too, and I just thought of this because you were saying that with the rule changes, is for the pitchers, it's a 10-day IL to start, but then it goes to 15-day IL, I believe, in May. I could be wrong on the timing of it, but I know they're starting pitchers on the 10-day IL early and then 15. So we'll see if that 15-day IL, bringing that back, that's going to be interesting to see
how they mess with that.
To see who still messes with
how many guys go on the IL like the April 28th or something,
and then there's a mass return on May 7th.
They
wouldn't all be surprised.
You guys all get a breather, and we'll see you in a bit.
Replacement players for the first week of May.
Well, it's like something I've kind of not focused too much on, but it could be a real thing, especially if you're on an AL East team. I heard Trevor May on the Chris Rose rotation talking about it today, because the Mets don't have to go to Toronto, but they're talking about how the New York situation changed with the COVID vaccines and everything. And he says they don't know how players will do it, because players lose their paycheck if they aren't able to play, which I guess the union's already fighting, of course. But I guess they're trying to find ways to do, like, you're going to see like random bereavements when players go to Toronto and stuff, because technically you're not allowed to talk about medical issues. So pay attention if you have a player coming, like another fab thing you can think about. If you have a team going to Toronto in the coming weeks, pay attention to that. That could get fun. Another
Texas
thing,
Rangers, three at Toronto this weekend. So,
yeah. So, yeah. We'll see what happens there. That could be another just like, oh, geez, here we go again moment. Yep. But something we'll all have to deal with. But on that note, Ryan, episode 2 is in the books. Final thoughts as we are like a week, this time next week, like it'll be highlight night. Like all the highlights are on MLB Network right now.
Cannot wait. Like, episode 3 is going to be opening day. I guess I should have realized this earlier, but opening day and the Masters are the same day.
Yeah, Tiger Woods. Like,
and yeah, all the hoopla around a potential Tiger return. Episode 3 is going to be fun. Might have to sneak in a little bit of golf talk. We'll see.
Yep. People are used to that by now with me. Like, you kind of, it happens. It gets pigeonholed in. That's how it works.
Absolutely stoked for it. And yeah, like, episode 3, we'll be talking about games and who went deep and who looked good in their first start. And I absolutely cannot wait for that.
Yeah. It'll be like the old NFL phrase, overreaction Mondays. It'll be overreaction Thursday night. We are going to have way too much fun with and how bad some of our teams are already because somebody got shelled, like Garrett Cole only went 2 innings or something. Like, it's all going to happen. Something crazy, just how many blown saves. Like, it's going
to
be great.
It's the beauty of this game. Yeah. Like, and it's funny, the transition from draft season to the season, like, everything looks so good right now. You know, you draft a team, you love everyone you drafted. It's all going to go to hell very soon, and you just got to adapt. It's a beautiful game. Just be ready for it because, yeah, like you said, maybe Cole gets rocked. Maybe DeGrom's out till May. Like, who knows? It's quite the ride.
Yep. One of my new favorite gifts I use, the buckle up gift. Just buckle up. Yep. It's about to get fun. But on that note, we will wrap things up. Everybody, check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ. I'm at BDentric. Thanks for listening again. We'll be back with you guys next week, like Ryan said, with some real baseball to talk about. Catch y'all later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.